I'm David Martin Davies, and coming up on The Source, measles is spreading across the country. Last year, Texas saw its biggest measles outbreak in decades. This year, the number of measles cases in the U.S. has already surpassed the number tracked last year. Almost all of the cases have been among children and teens who were unvaccinated. Public health experts also warned that mixed messages coming from Secretary of Health Robert F. Kennedy Jr. are making the problems worse. A think tank aligned with Kennedy is now calling for the elimination of the childhood vaccine schedule. What happens when falling vaccine rates due to the spread of fear, confusion, and misinformation collides with a virus that is aggressive and sometimes deadly? This is a community conversation. We want to hear from you. Call in at 833-877-8255. That's what's coming up on The Source, but first, this news.
Support for The Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at uthealthsa.org.
Live from the John L. Santico Studio in downtown San Antonio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Measles was declared eliminated from the United States in 2000, but now it's back in a serious way. Cases are rising. Outbreaks are spreading across the multiple states. Health officials say the overwhelming majority of infections are happening in people who are unvaccinated or whose vaccination status is unknown. The concern is not just the number of cases, but what the outbreak says about falling vaccination rates, the growing reach of health misinformation, and the risk of facing infants, immunocompromised people, and communities with low vaccine coverage. Today, we're talking about why measles continues to spread, the myths that confuse parents and families, the real medical and financial cost of the outbreaks, and the debate over the childhood vaccine schedule, and what would it take to make measles go away as we counter disinformation. Right now, we're joined by Dr. Giridhar Maya, a senior policy officer at the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. And Dr. Maya, welcome to The Source.
Thank you so much for having me.
So for people who think that measles is just an old disease, not that serious, what's happening right now in the United States?
Yeah, as you noted, there was a time in the recent past where we had eliminated measles from this country. And that was a tremendous, tremendous public health success. And it was very important for the health of our children. But unfortunately, what we have seen is a resurgence of this disease all across the United States. And that is due to a number of factors. But one of the main ones is that we are seeing false information being spread all across the country from the highest levels of government, unfortunately, sowing a lot of fear and confusion for parents and caregivers about vaccines in general, including the measles vaccine. And in 2026 already, we've seen almost 100 cases of measles in Texas. And we're likely to see many, many more cases this year than we saw last year. So this is a true public health issue.
So to give context to the when we got the measles elimination status in 2000, in the early 1990s, we saw an effort by resulting from the George H.W. Bush presidency, and they put money and resources into neighborhood campaigns, vaccination programs, reacting because in the 1980s, we saw the Reagan administration make a lot of cuts to these public health programs. This is a cycle that we've been in before, right?
I'd say yes and no. We have seen some fluctuation in vaccination rates and investments in the public health infrastructure needed for vaccination over time. But I'll say what we're experiencing right now is anomalous in a couple ways. First, that we have the nation's highest health official not able to fully endorse vaccination, even for a public health threat like measles. And severely significant cuts, not just in public health funding for state and local public health departments, but also programs like Medicaid, which cover a huge proportion of our nation's children. So I do think what we're seeing in that way poses a unique type of threat. And one of the things that we are emphasizing is that there's still is very strong support for vaccines across the country among parents, but that they need to get the information they need. They need to get their questions answered from trusted sources, and we would point them towards their own pediatricians and family doctors.
Sounds like you're saying that this measles outbreak that we're having in the United States is different than the one that we've had before, because this is a canary in a coal mine situation. The measles outbreak is symptomatic of a breakdown in public health?
Yes, that's right. We have seen really a dismantling of our public health infrastructure, especially over the last year, directed by the federal government, but really trickling down to affect states and localities all across the country. And ironic thing is that the measles vaccine is one of the most effective that we have. The first dose is recommended at about 12 months of age. The second dose is recommended between 4 and 6 years of age. And it's 95% effective at preventing measles. Folks may not really even be familiar with measles infection. In most kids, it causes a rash and a respiratory infection. But what's really important for people to know is that about 1 in 10 kids who get infected with measles actually need to be hospitalized because they're so sick. And about 1 in 20 can develop pneumonia. So this is not a benign illness, but it's one for which we do have a very effective and safe vaccine.
And 1 in 100 can have like brain swelling and really chronic, and it can result in death.
It can. In rare cases, it can. The brain swelling and inflammation is about 1 in 1,000 cases, not 1 in 100 cases. But yes, that remains a significant risk. And I think the thing to go back to is that the best way to prevent measles illness, both for individual children and communities as a whole, is through vaccination.
We've had two deaths here in Texas last year from measles, although Secretary of Health Robert F. Kennedy Jr. says it was a death with measles. Why do you think he makes that distinction?
I think he makes it, frankly, to sow confusion about the issue. When causes of death are determined, especially for children, there is a very rigorous process that is gone through to determine the cause of death. And I believe that all the evidence points towards measles being the causes of death. And I think he's just trying to draw attention away from that fact. One thing I think that's important to emphasize is that oftentimes these issues, and Secretary Kennedy does this, are posed as an either or. Either you focus on a child's overall healthy development, their nutrition, making sure they're in healthy environments, or you get them vaccinated, and they're pitted against each other. But what most parents know, and what we would emphasize, is it's not an either or, it's a both and. You should do both things as a parent or caregiver. Make sure they grow up in the healthiest environment possible, and make sure they're vaccinated. These vaccines are truly miraculous in terms of the number of illnesses, hospitalizations, and deaths that they've been able to prevent since they were introduced in the United States.
Taking a 1 minute break, we're going to continue our conversation about the outbreak of measles across the country. What's behind this and where is this going? And you can call in with your questions and comments. 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Are you making sure that your kids are vaccinated for measles and everything else? Or do you have concerns? Have you heard this disinformation that is spreading online? How do you hear that? What does it mean to you? We'd love to hear your take on that. 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Source continues right after this.
Support for this podcast of The Source comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' compensation provider committed to rewarding policyholders who keep their workers safe and losses low. More at texasmutual.com/TXM Advantage. Texas Mutual. Texans get it.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about the resurgence of measles in the United States, why outbreaks were growing, how falling vaccination rates are helping fuel the spread, what health experts say the public needs to understand about the risk, prevention, and misinformation. The guest is Dr. Giridhar Mallya, and she is a public information officer, a senior policy officer at the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. So, Dr. Mallya, how alarming is it that the United States has already seen more than 1,200 confirmed measles cases so far this year, 10 weeks into 2026?
It's highly alarming and totally unnecessary. We have a vaccine that has gone through rigorous testing, both before it was introduced, and now we have decades of experience with it that prevents measles, keeps individual kids safe, and keeps communities safe. But unfortunately, we've already seen, as you said, almost 1,300 cases this year. And it's concerning because it has real health risks for children as they grow and develop. But it also shines a light on the fact that we are seeing continued declines in childhood vaccination rates all across the country.
I wonder about that number, because it does seem like there are probably a lot of people children who get measles and then they don't get treatment for it.
So, I mean, the first thing to emphasize is that since we still do have relatively high vaccination rates in this country against measles and other childhood illnesses, the measles infection is not super, super common, although we have seen a really historic number of cases last year and this year. Most kids who get measles do okay. They have a rash, they have an upper respiratory infection, and they recover over the course of about 1 to 2 weeks. But it's the kids that don't have that benign course that we're particularly worried about. Because as said before, they can be hospitalized, they can develop pneumonia, they can develop other complications. And then they also become a source for other infections. Measles is highly, highly contagious, more contagious than flu or COVID. If 10 people who are unvaccinated are exposed to somebody with measles, 9 of them will likely develop the illness themselves. So it's a highly contagious disease that has serious consequences for children.
Well, we had the outbreak in West Texas last year, and that was terrible. The outbreaks that we have now, are they connected to that outbreak that we had in Texas?
So we have seen 12 outbreaks already this year all across the country. And I believe there is still an outbreak right at the West Texas border. I can't confirm whether that is directly connected to the outbreak that people are so familiar with from last year. But what we are seeing is that outbreaks in one community can lead to outbreaks in neighboring communities. So right now, there's a large outbreak in South Carolina, and that has fueled another set of outbreaks in North Carolina, which is just adjacent to that state. So these outbreaks can lead to other outbreaks, and that's something that we do see commonly.
So as the United States is looking at losing its elimination of measles status, and is it because are they looking at the continuation of a single outbreak or just the presence of measles widespread in the United States for over a year?
Yeah, it is. It's determined based on a few different factors. The one that's most important is that there is a sustained outbreak or series of outbreaks that lasts for a full year or more. And that's kind of a central feature of the definition of defining whether measles has been eliminated or not from a nation.
Canada has already lost its status. Spain, a lot of other countries that we have traveled back and forth from in the United States. So, and measles travels, people visit other countries. So we could see this is not just a U.S. problem, it's becoming a global problem.
Yeah, it is. And I think whenever we're talking about infectious diseases, we can't naively assume that even if things are well controlled in our neighborhood or community, that we're not potentially at risk. These are global issues, and especially in communities with a lot of international travel, the measles outbreaks can start from cases that have been brought to this country from other parts of the world.
I've seen that in where there's an outbreak happening, that doctors will vaccinate families who children younger than 12 months old in order to protect them. Why aren't we doing that just generally, since now we're having measles spreading quite a bit?
Yeah, in some cases, like you said, especially in the midst of outbreaks, there are sometimes recommendations made to give children their first vaccination before 12 months of age. Why we don't generally recommend vaccination at an earlier time, I think what the data has generally shown is that kids are most likely to have a robust immune response right around 12 months of age to the measles vaccine. So that's generally why it has been recommended at that age. But it does raise an interesting question. If we continue to see a spread of outbreaks where children under 12 months of age are potentially at risk, it may lead to tailored recommendations in certain communities to start vaccination earlier.
So what are we learning about how measles spreads in these recent outbreaks? Is it spreading more quickly, than it has in the past, or have things changed since the 90s when we had the last big outbreak?
Biologically,
but human contact-wise, you know.
Sure. Yeah. So nothing has changed about the biology, or nothing has changed significantly about the virus. But in terms of the social transmission, generally, what we are seeing is that the virus is taking hold in closely knit communities with very low rates of vaccination. So that is the perfect set of conditions in which an outbreak can start. But then since measles is transmitted by the respiratory route, it can mean that people who even just have casual exposure to a person with measles can contract the virus. It stays in the air for up to a couple hours. So that is what makes measles transmission and measles outbreaks so dangerous from a public health perspective.
And it's a two-shot regimen for the measles vaccine in order to have lifetime immunity? And it is lifetime immunity?
That's right. It's a two-shot schedule. The first one at right around 12 months, and the second between 4 and 6 years of age, usually before school entry. Generally, what we see is that this two-dose schedule is enough to provide coverage for people throughout their lifetime. Now, there are always exceptions, especially for people who have some type of compromise of their immune system. But generally, the two doses do provide lifetime protection.
I've been hearing about that if someone has measles, that the infection can trigger something called immune amnesia. What is that?
So it is not very common, but in some cases the infection can cause a condition where the immune system doesn't recognize and respond to the measles infection in the way that we would usually predict. So again, that's a fairly rare consequence, but it is one that exists.
There are some figures in the MAHA movement, Make America Healthy Again. They praise Denmark's vaccine approach, which is different than the United States' approach. And they're saying that there in Denmark, they have fewer vaccines. And they point to that like as the model that we should be doing here in the U.S. What's wrong with that argument?
Yeah, this idea that we should adopt Denmark's vaccine schedule was really central to the administration's rationale for removing six vaccines from the childhood vaccine schedule just a couple months ago. And there are a few things wrong with drawing on that as a source for our recommendations here. The first is that Denmark has a universal healthcare system. So if kids get sick with measles or any other infection, they can very easily and affordably get care. Unfortunately, that's not the case here. Second, there is a different epidemiology or pattern of disease in Denmark as there is here. It's a much smaller country. It's a much more homogeneous country in terms of race, ethnicity, and even class. So the degree of risk is different in Denmark. And then finally, while we have seen declining immunization rates here in this country, they have held pretty steady in Denmark. So trust in vaccines and public health is higher in Denmark than it is here. So all those factors suggest that we can't just adopt a vaccine schedule from a country that is different from us in so many ways for it to be effective here in this country. Our vaccine schedule, every single vaccine that's added to the childhood vaccine schedule, goes through a very rigorous process to determine, is it effective? Does it actually prevent illness, hospitalization, and death? And are there side effects or unintended impacts? And each individual vaccine that's on the schedule has gone through that process, and the conclusion has been, yes, it belongs there. Kids will benefit from it. So removing these six vaccines just because Denmark doesn't have them is, I think, a short-sighted and ill-fitting approach for the United States.
Do you think it's the argument presented in bad faith? Because it seems to be cherry-picking, or it's an example that they use in order to support an argument, but yet so much of it is taken out of context.
Yeah, that's right. I think it is an answer searching for a question. The administration wanted to remove vaccines from the childhood vaccine schedule, and they found Denmark's schedule as one that they could point to. And you know, their claim has been that the U.S. is an outlier, but in fact, the U.S. is not a huge outlier in terms of the number of vaccines that are recommended for children. It is close to what's recommended in much of Western Europe with some small differences on the margins. And it's actually Denmark, even when compared to other Scandinavian nations, that is an outlier, that has a disparately smaller number of vaccines than other countries geographically and demographically like it.
Right. And they continue to say, like MAHA, the think tank, they called for the complete elimination of the childhood vaccine schedule and eliminate all vaccinations until they can be proven to be, quote, safe and effective, which has already happened. So, I mean, they point to Denmark, but yet they really want to go much further than what Denmark does. So it kind of like makes that argument flimsy. Let's take a break here. We're going to continue our conversation. If you've got a question or a comment about measles, vaccinations, the disinformation that's being spread online about this, about the vaccines, give us a call, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Source continues right after this.
When major decisions affect South Central Texas, you turn to TPR for clarity and depth. Investigative and accountability reporting require time, independence, and consistent community support. That is why our spring fundraising drive starts March 11th and why growing our sustaining membership matters. Monthly donors provide the foundation that keeps this work strong year-round. If you value in-depth local news and civic coverage, become a sustaining member today at tpr.org.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about the outbreaks of measles happening across the country. Started in Texas. Now we're seeing measles outbreaks across the entire United States. We're seeing an outbreak in the Carolinas, in California, the Dakotas. We're seeing cases in Colorado. They're spreading. And we have a safe and effective vaccine. It will prevent your child from getting measles, but with the myths and information being spread online, it's becoming more difficult. We have a Health and Human Services Secretary, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. He is spreading mixed messages about the need for the vaccination programs, and we're seeing cuts to public health programs across the United States. We're speaking with Dr. Girdhir Mallya, the senior policy officer at the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. So the public health cutbacks and the cuts to a national vaccine program, what is happening there? What do we need to know?
I think the main things to know are that we have seen a collection of cuts to our public health infrastructure that are affecting our ability to get vaccine to kids in a timely manner. What a lot of people don't appreciate is that most state and local health departments get the majority of their funding from the federal government through the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. So when the CDC sees huge cuts to funding and staffing and its general sort of public position, then that has direct impacts on what happens for local health departments in terms of being able to stand up vaccine clinics, to have nurses and other health professionals available to answer questions from people in the public about which vaccines to get, what types of side effects to expect, and a whole host of other questions. At the same time, we have seen really significant attacks on our nation's public insurance system, the Medicaid program. Almost 40% of children in this country get their health insurance through Medicaid, and that's how they have access to a doctor or a nurse practitioner. So all of these cuts to investments in public health funding and staffing have real consequences on our vaccine infrastructure in this country.
We're seeing state by state, we're able to see which states are better at dealing with these outbreaks than others. Some states have higher levels of investment in public health than others. Texas has one of the lowest investments, lowest public dollars going into public health versus like New Mexico. And then we're able to really see, as this last outbreak in West Texas happened on the Texas-New Mexico border, we're able to see how state public policy makes a huge difference in whether or not these outbreaks will be able to be contained or if they're fueled. Is that being looked at?
Yes. So states have an important role to play. While most funding for state and local health departments comes from the federal government, a significant portion does come from states. And when we talk about outbreaks, state investments in public health do matter. First, on the prevention end, if states are really good at promoting vaccines, making sure that vaccines are available to children who are uninsured or underinsured, and have strong vaccine requirements for school entry. All those things, which are determined at the state level, can prevent outbreaks in the first place. But then in a case of an outbreak, as you were describing, the state response also matters. Can they mount an emergency response team to go to these communities where there are outbreaks and do education, sometimes door-to-door and face-to-face with families who may have questions or even fears about vaccines, but who need accurate information? Can they stand up vaccine clinics so that in the midst of outbreaks, kids and parents can be vaccinated? Do they have the data systems available to track the spread of measles during an outbreak? That requires a lot of intensive human effort to track cases moving from person to person and from family to family. So state investments play a huge role both in prevention and response.
Well, we saw here in Texas during the outbreak in West Texas that the state of Texas was only posting the vaccine number updates twice a week. New Mexico was doing it every day. Also, New Mexico was doing contact tracing online. They were letting everyone know, like, oh, we had a case, and this person went to Walmart, and they went to this store, and it went, you know, and we weren't getting that at all in Texas. It seemed like in New Mexico, they were being much more effective in communicating to the public about what was happening on the ground.
Yes, and communication really matters because people have questions, they have concerns, and they want to know what to do and what not to do. So having a consistent voice that can be trusted and that can be depended upon is key. And I think, like you said, the states and communities that do it best, they are talking to people every day through every channel available, radio, TV, social and digital media, and most importantly, working through trusted community organizations. I worked at the Department of Public Health in Philadelphia for 7 years. And one of the things that we always said is outbreaks or public health emergencies aren't the time to develop relationships with community organizations. The time to do that is before an emergency or outbreak, because then those relationships are in place. So if you need to reach a community that maybe distrusts governmental public health for good or bad reasons, there is another place that they can go to get accurate information that the health department has a relationship with. So I think all these things matter in terms of responding effectively and appropriately to outbreaks like measles.
In West Texas, we saw that the Secretary of Health, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., was telling people to take vitamin A as a treatment for measles. As I understand it, there is no actual treatment for measles, and that vitamin A certainly is not that, and saying people should take cod liver oil. We heard from a pharmacist in Lubbock and those areas in West Texas that they were selling out of these products because people were buying them and using them, and then that there were children showing up at the hospitals with vitamin A overdoses, that they're having liver damage from this. Can you talk about vitamin A? Why is vitamin A in this picture at all?
Sure. So first I'll say that in the midst of any measles outbreak, the most important thing you can do is to get vaccinated for measles if you haven't been vaccinated. So let's talk a little bit about vitamin A. Globally, especially in populations with vitamin A deficiency, vitamin A can be an adjunctive treatment, meaning part of a treatment regimen for children who are infected with measles. But it is especially helpful in communities and parts of the world where there is vitamin A deficiency. Thankfully, that's not the case in our country. Secondly, it's just one of many measures that we describe as supportive measures that are put in place with measles. There's no specific treatment for it. There's not a medication or other sort of intervention that's recommended for everybody with measles. It's really just supportive care, making sure kids are staying hydrated, making sure their temperatures are managed, and looking out for signs of serious infection like we talked about before. So vitamin A is not a cure-all. And in most cases in this nation, it's really not going to make any significant difference in the treatment of measles. And it's really unconscionable that people have been turned away from vaccines, which we know work, towards something like vitamin A, which at the very least is not going to help, and at the very most can cause harm like you described.
So this anti-vaccine rhetoric continues to come from some of our most highly ranked health officials like Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and some of the other people that have in the with this Health and Human Services Secretary Department. Why aren't these people being like, what's happening with the medical community? So they're in order to get the real messaging out.
Yeah, I think one thing that you've seen is as the federal government has sowed more fear and confusion and false information about vaccines, you have seen the medical community respond individually and collectively. Individually, what you see is pediatricians and family doctors continue to do the essential work that they do every day. That's meeting with parents, caregivers face-to-face, making evidence-based recommendations about vaccines, and answering any and every question that comes to them. Collectively, we're seeing organizations like the American Academy of Pediatrics say that we are going to maintain our own vaccine recommendations for children, and we are going to base them on the best available science. And the best available science continues to show that the full childhood vaccine schedule, including the six vaccines that were removed by the federal government, they still deserve to be recommended to children because on balance, they provide a huge amount of benefit for individual children's health and the public's health.
That's The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted and produced by David Martin Davies. Technical support by Steve Short, Ruben Garcia, and Yvette Benavides.